She inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
You are indeed listening to Mrs. Green's World. This is Gina Murphy, darling. And Mrs. Green's World is a fun and informative place where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to one of our very important partners and sponsors, Habitat for Humanity. They truly do help give families a hand up, not a handout. And they are all about building homes, community, and hope. Consider reaching out to a Habitat for Humanity near you. There are lots of ways you can help. It's not just about writing a check. So get comfortable and get ready for another great show. The name of our show today is Preserving a National Treasure. And joining for me this next hour, and I'm sure you can hear the excitement in my voice, is a return guest to our show, but in a very different role from when I first interviewed her. Please join me in welcoming Heather White. Heather is the president and CEO of Yellowstone Forever. It's a newly formed entity that is dedicated to preserving this national treasure for generations to come, and this is the nonprofit partner for Yellowstone National Park. And given that it is such a national treasure, the leaders of this organization are very much, very keenly aware that Yellowstone needs the ideas, the energy, and the contribution from many different people to successfully not only enhance it and everything they're doing now, but preserve it for the future, given all of the changes we see going on with our weather and our climate in this day and age. With the launch of Yellowstone Forever, they're building a new model of partnership with the National Park Service, one that will engage more visitors and future stewards than ever before. The opportunities that Yellowstone Forever provides to experience, to connect, and to contribute are the first steps in a lifelong journey for people who want to preserve this park for generations to come. And making sure all that happens and leading the charge is none other than Heather White. Heather, welcome back, and it's so great to have you.
Thank you so much, Gina. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
What a shift. I mean, we have a lot of new listeners to our show who might not have on the tip of their tongue who Heather White, what you were doing, but you were the executive director of one of Mrs. Green's favorites forever and continues to be the Environmental Working Group, a trusted source for information. But what a spectacular change for you from there in Washington, D.C. to Bozeman. How's that working?
Oh, it's a dream come true. It really is. I had such an incredible experience with all the talented people at Environmental Working Group and, you know, love the mission of making sure people understood that protecting the environment is ultimately about protecting your personal health, which was great. My background, though, is in public lands and conservation biology. I studied environmental science at UVA and actually went abroad to New Zealand. Right now I'm looking at the mountain right next to the Roosevelt Arch, where Teddy Roosevelt in 1906 put the cornerstone of the entryway into Yellowstone. So it just doesn't get better than this.
It obviously does not. And I'll probably say this more than once throughout the show, very, very high on my bucket list is Yellowstone. So now that you're there, I have a double incentive to come and get a personal tour. I cannot
Absolutely.
Wait.
Absolutely. I would love to have you here. And it's on so many people's bucket list for many reasons. You know, one, it has the highest number of geysers in the world, if you can believe that.
Wow.
There's also, you know, grizzly bears, wolves, bison. I mean, it's incredible, the biodiversity, also the thermal features, and the intense beauty of it all. But I didn't realize, and I'm embarrassed to say this, I didn't realize this until probably just a couple years ago, that Yellowstone is the world's first national park.
I did not know that either, even in my research.
Isn't that incredible? So in 1872, Congress protected Yellowstone. as the first national park, and that is the idea that kind of took off across the world. And actually, you know, Wallace Stegner called it one of America's best ideas, and that is having public lands and spaces set aside for future enjoyment for future generations. And that's one of the things it says on the Roosevelt Arch when you go through the Gardner entrance of the park, is for the benefit and enjoyment of the people. And that's really what the creation of the park is all about.
And it gives you a sense, like when I when preparing for this, of gratitude, at least I believe it should, for the people that did have that vision, that didn't get all chopped up and eaten up and taken away, and it's preserved forever. What I didn't know is that we're talking about 2.2 million acres that you and your team are charged with protecting and preserving. I mean, it's massive.
It is. It's massive, and I think that's one of the exciting things about the experience, is that it's one of these places that you keep discovering, even if you are one of these people that come year after year, even if you're a person who only visits once, or maybe if you've never visited, but just by knowing Yellowstone is there, you're captivated by it. So it's just all of these, it's expansive in geography, also the landscapes themselves really speak to you, and it's a, you know, what John Muir called it, a wonderland, and it really is America's wonderland.
And it's a living laboratory. I mean, it really is. It's not just a place where people can drive through and visit and walk and hike. There's so much science and exploration and research going on there. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely, and it continues to astound me. So I knew a lot about the bison recovery that happened in Yellowstone. And, you know, there are thousands of bison now in Yellowstone National Park, but at one point in the last century, there were about 200 bison left, and Yellowstone was at the center of the bison recovery effort. And if you think about American culture, how important bison was to us when we were first founded as a country, I mean, literally millions of bison used to roam throughout the continent and throughout our country, and now to know that we've at least seen a pretty significant recovery of the bison is wonderful, and it happened at Yellowstone. So there's research when it comes to wildlife. The reintroduction of the wolves that happened 20 years ago is pretty incredible. But one of the things that doesn't get as much attention is all of the research going on the bacteria and the geothermal features. So one of the incredible features is called Mammoth Hot Springs. And Gina, I don't know if you're aware that NASA is actually working with the National Park Service in Mammoth Hot Springs. And so these are terraced, travertine terraces of hot springs right past the Gardner entrance of the park. And they are looking at these thermophilic microbes, and they think they may actually have mysteries or help us solve the mystery of life, whether or not there's life on other planets.
You are kidding
because
me.
We are so ancient. Yeah, it's just
You're
fascinating.
Kidding me.
So no, it's really neat. And actually, one of the things that we're doing, because we just merged about on October 2nd, we merged. On November 16th, we launched our website. So it's very, very recent. And we are going to give a new book about the Mammoth Hot Springs to all the public libraries within 100 miles of Yellowstone National Park as part of our launch of the new organization, Yellowstone Forever. And we're dedicating it to the future explorers and scientists of Yellowstone National Park.
I mean, talk about getting goosebumps. And I always say to people, you can't fake goosebumps. It's like one of those things that you hear about, and it's like, are you kidding me right now? This is so significant. So tying what their research is and the microbes to life on other planets?
Right. It's incredible. It's incredible. And that's the neat thing about Yellowstone, is that you just keep new and new discoveries happen every day. There's also a lot of anthropologic studies that are going on, a lot of archaeological sites. 26 different tribes have spent time in Yellowstone and learning a lot about the culture. It's also, you know, fascinating to me, because one of the projects we support is the Historic Research Center in Gardner, Montana, and it has this incredible collection of a famous painter named Thomas Moran, who painted Yellowstone in the 1870s. So there's, you know, it's art, it's culture, it's history, it's science. It's just, it's a wonderful place to not only visit, but for us to know that we're preserving for the future, because you keep peeling back all these different layers of discovery about who we are and how we all connect.
And to get again to your point of the vision of the people that really committed to protecting it, unlike what we see happening with old growth forests and rainforests around the world. I mean, and what made me think of that is the research on the microbes. I mean, there are microbes that haven't even been touched in the rainforest, and they're getting clear cut and burned down for things like oil. But we digress, and we're going to be talking about Yellowstone, not the devastation of the rainforest.
Well, right, but I think your point is about this interconnection and the importance of conservation, and the fact that these folks had the foresight, you know, in the 1870s to protect this special place for future generations, and then to take that concept and that notion of conserving these unique lands and protecting them for the future. And that's really a uniquely American concept that's now spread internationally, but we need to do a lot more work internationally. And so I think that's making sure that we connect the dots between these magnificent places and why they need to be protected, I think, is incredibly important.
So important, so important. And I have some questions about that I would call the visitors want to know, the future visitors.
Sure.
And then I really would like you to go into, I had no idea, I guess, of the magnitude and scope of what Yellowstone Forever is charged with and all of the different projects and all that. I'd love to delve into those a little bit. But
terrific.
As far as almost, it's almost like a tourist question, but every one of our listeners is a potential tourist, so we want
to
know. What are some of the biggest challenges that you face for the park, both currently and what you think could be even some bigger challenges in the future?
Excellent question, Gina. And one of the resources I highly recommend is National Geographic April 2016 edition. The
okay,
whole
and guess
edition,
what? I have it.
Fantastic. The
I have
whole
it.
Edition is about Yellowstone. And it really talks and outlines in a beautiful, very accessible way all of the challenges of this incredible resource. April 2016 edition has been turned into a book, and it's written by David Quammen, who is a fantastic writer. So I encourage people to really check that out. One of the things that is the blessing and the curse of Yellowstone is the incredible passion that people have for it.
Yes.
And the fact it is on so many people's bucket list. So the park is in danger of being loved to death. We had 4.2 million visits this year, which is creating a lot of stress on the infrastructure of the park, everything from the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone Overlook and the trail starting to crumble, too many being the parking lot being full by 9 a.m., people having to wait. There's a lot of traffic jams, and we see this in a lot of national parks, but in Yellowstone in particular, the fact that we have so many people that want to go there is starting to affect the visitor experience. Right. If you go to Old Faithful, I remember I saw Old Faithful the first time when I was around 11. My dad had
You were 11, because I found that in research with your dad, which we'd love to talk about. That's when the seeds were planted. Little did you know what
Little
you would be
I
doing.
Little did I know. I would be there, absolutely. And I was at Old Faithful, but I didn't. I remember connecting to something larger than myself, but I didn't remember 10,000 other people on the platform with
me
looking at Old Faithful. So that kind of crush of visitors is starting to affect the experience, and that's something that the park really needs to think about, is how do we move people through the park? How do we encourage people to go into the backcountry of the park?
Right.
But I think that's one of the most significant issues that the park is facing right now. I think the other issue, and I would love to get your thoughts, Gina, because you have so many interesting people that come on your show.
I do.
I'm sure
indeed.
You have some neat ideas about this, is how can we use technology to get this next generation excited about Yellowstone, but then also create opportunities for them to unplug?
And it is the quintessence question.
Right.
I mean, it really is. And I know I have a wonderful relationship with the Western National Parks Association, and they're mm-hmm. struggling with some of the very same things, and they're getting innovative and creative. So on the one hand, some of their issues are not having enough visitors, and then on the other hand, some of them are heavily visited, and their focus is how do you educate the youth? So they've opened a place, a location in Los Angeles, in the inner city, to have it be a hub for connecting kids and their families with the experience of the park outside of it, of the parks. You know what I mean? So I think that creative ways are going to be so necessary, and I wish I had all the answers, but, and I wonder, is it ever discussed? I know we have a, you know, a beautiful, no comparison, but Sabino Canyon, and they actually, in my lifetime, have, you know, you can't drive in Sabino. They have trams.
Right.
And so that has just preserved the park. It was on a road to destruction. And to think of that on scale with the number of visitors that you have, how many did you say there were?
4.2 million.
4.2.
Just in 2016.
That's a lot of trams.
Yes.
So that's one of the biggest challenges that you will have to face, and getting kids in there and excited.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah.
And making sure the experience isn't one where you feel like you're on a subway as you're going through the Grand Prismatic Spring. This is a place, Yellowstone is a place of personal transformation. There are so many stories of people, and for everyone it's different. From some people it is the microbes. Look how cool that, you know,
right,
look
right.
how cool it is that this hot spring can help us unlock the secret of life on other planets, and if that is a reality. Or for other people, it is the wolves and the wolves in winter.
That's huge,
you know,
for me.
For some, it's just
huge.
The landscapes,
yes.
you know, just the breathtaking landscapes. For others, it's the geology. But if there are so many people, it does affect your experience. And so I think that's one of the biggest issues, is looking at what's happened in other parks. How will we deal with mobility and how we move people through the park will be one of the big issues that the park faces. And this other idea of being creative and making sure, and this is something I've talked about with Yellowstone Forever, because we are the primary nonprofit partner of the park, we fundraise for critical park projects. We also provide educational opportunities. And one of the things with respect to education I think is so critical for us is just what you were talking about in your experience, is our job is to take Yellowstone out into the world. Not necessarily bring
yes.
more people here.
Yes.
And how can we take the lessons? How can we use technology for lecture series? We have wonderful classes that we provide through our Yellowstone Forever Institute, where people can take guided tours. They can spend 3 days backpacking, just learning about the predators of Yellowstone. You can do the waterfalls of Yellowstone. You can do the wildflowers of Yellowstone. But I think there's an opportunity for us to put some of that information online so people can learn, even if they don't have the budget, the time to come out and see us, or even if they're preparing their trip, they might want to take a course before they come. So that's one of the things that we're trying to be creative to, about using technology, just like you were saying, to bring the park out to more people.
And you make such a good point. And of course, I'm so proud of you and the vision for that, because not everybody can afford to go to Yellowstone. Not
right.
everybody can do the family vacation from wherever they are. And the kids that are in marginalized communities or lower income communities, we want to get them too. We want to get them to have the experience, and there are creative ways now more than ever before with all of the technology and Skype and bringing things into classrooms. That just makes me happy to hear you say that, because we had a show recently about dolphins, and, you know, it's a disgrace to say this on the air, but they opened a dolphinarium in Phoenix. Of course they did. Mm-hmm. So that kids could have the pleasure of swimming with dolphins and grabbing on their fins. And you should have heard me. I'm like, not everybody has to swim with a dolphin, okay?
Right.
You just
right.
If you can't afford to go on a tour, watch a movie. Everybody
right.
does not have. I said, I want to see orangutans, but I don't think they should go capture them and bring them to a zoo so I can get the opportunity to see one. So it's a beautiful way to, you know, just express that there is a deep caring on your part and the part of the people there to bring the experience outside of the park for those that are not fortunate enough to visit it. And Heather White, you're not going to believe this, but we are up on the first break, and I'm about, you know, through three of my 30 questions.
So, Gina, I'm having so much fun.
I know.
Thank you.
And you knew this was going to happen. It's like I was grinning the whole time I was preparing for it. So everybody, stay here with me. We're talking about the preservation of a national treasure that everybody knows, Yellowstone National Park. Stay here with me. More from Heather White, who's leading the charge into the future.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy, darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. We're talking about preserving a national treasure, Yellowstone National Park, and joining us for this delightful, rapidly evaporating hour is Heather White, President and CEO of Yellowstone Forever, the nonprofit partner of Yellowstone National Park. And her role as leader of Yellowstone Forever is to achieve the organization's mission of connecting people to Yellowstone, not just through outstanding visitor experiences and educational programs, but how do we get it out there and translating those experiences into lifelong support and philanthropic investment, equally as important. And as I said earlier in the hour, maybe a little known fact about Heather, she did first visit Yellowstone when she was 11 as part of a cross-country national park tour with her dad, sparking a deep, lifelong commitment to conservation. Heather, it's just a delight to have you here.
Thank you so much, Gina. And you just got me choked up when I was thinking about my trip with my dad.
I bet. I mean, it got me, when I read it, I went, oh yeah. My gosh, you're kidding. And you have come full circle now. Your girls are there and your husband to enjoy this next part of your journey. I'm on the Let's Watch What Heather's Doing list.
Oh, thank you so much, Gina.
Let's talk a little bit about, there is an incredible need for private philanthropy. It's not something that you're not able to do all that you do just through admissions to the park, I would assume. And people might think it gets taken care of by the government because it's a national park. Well, we know how that goes. So how critical is the component of private philanthropy to do what you want to do for Yellowstone Forever?
Thank you, Gina. It's essential. We really need philanthropic investment to help support the park because, as you said, the budgets that support our federal lands just keep getting smaller and smaller, and the needs keep getting greater and greater, whether it be 4.2 million visits, whether it be how do we create opportunities for kids that don't have the resources to have a cross-country trip with their dad when they're 11 to go visit a whole bunch of national parks. How can we get them to the parks? How we need philanthropists, and that's kind of a really big word.
Yes.
Philanthropy. You know, a lot of people think Carnegie and Mellon when they think philanthropy, but it is every dollar that anyone gives us, we make sure that about 89 cents goes directly to park.
Wow.
To support the park.
Wow.
So that's something that we are really adamant about, that whether it be providing educational services or literally helping provide money to support the upgrade of the trails of the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone, or to help create a new youth conservation campus at Yellowstone.
Wow.
These are the types of projects that we do. And the funding is really critical. Private individuals like you and me can make a really significant difference. We have foundations, we have corporate sponsors, but even $5, $10, $25 contributions really can make a significant difference for the park meeting the needs that it has to make sure that it can create these good visitors' experience. And in addition to that, also, as you know, the science and research budgets are often on the chopping block,
right,
too.
Right.
So we come in to try to provide that type of support for things like wolf recovery and all of the research that we've learned over the last 20 years of the wolf populations being reintroduced and then thriving in Yellowstone National Park.
I can't wait to see my first one. I just have to keep saying that. It's like, now that you're there, I'm so going there. It's moving up on my bucket list. But I think we really need to re-emphasize that point and not gloss over it. Private philanthropy sounds big. I have to get a big gift. I have to give a lot of money. And yet, having been in the nonprofit arena for, you know, always in my life in some capacity, if you give $10 a month or $5 a month, that is what I call cash flow, and it's called investing in the future, and it's called stability. So to all of our listeners, there is no such thing as a donation that's too small. It all goes to the greater good.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Yellowstone.org is our website where we have a tremendous amount of resources. If you're planning a trip to Yellowstone, if you're just interested in looking at the incredibly beautiful photos we have from the park, if you want to know more about the research, if you want to know how to support the park and support our work, Yellowstone.org is a great resource for
and
that.
And if you want to just enjoy a morning, you can click, 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 and then you see the brochure and you want to see the whole brochure because it's so gorgeous. And you're like, oh, there are the bison. Oh, look, there are the wolves. Oh, look, there are the elk. And you go on a trip down the rabbit hole like Alice, and you're saying, I love it here. I want to live here in this amazing website. Let's talk a little bit. I have that tourist question that I want to ask and not forget, but do you have problems with visitors in terms of their interaction with the animals and the respect for them? Do they try to feed the wildlife? Do they really know that all bears are wild? What's the experience there?
It varies greatly, but unfortunately there's been a lot of negative human-animal interaction. I'll just say that, mostly because either of ignorance
because
or
of
people just not... people not thinking it's going to happen to them. So every year we have someone who gets either trampled or thrown by a bison. So the bison, their visual perimeter is about 8 feet.
So
you can get kind
away.
Of, you can get, a lot of people feel like they can get close without a bison seeing you, but their head weighs about 200 pounds and their body weighs 2,000 pounds. So with a flick of a head, a young kid can be literally thrown 40 or 50 feet, and that's happened in the park. You know, a parent trying to get their kid to have a photo taken next to the bison. Same with elk. We've had elk ram cars. We've had people get too close to elk. I mean, just this idea, and I think this speaks to our disconnect with nature. You know, why it's so important for us to preserve these places like Yellowstone is for people to respect the fact that there is this concept of wild, and these are wild animals, and a lot of people don't understand that. We've also, you may have read, unfortunately, there was a harrowing incident that happened this summer where a young man was with his sister, and he wanted to go soak in a hot pool. Now, there is a place called the Boiling River, which is wonderful, totally appropriate for people to go soak there. But there are all kinds of signage around the Norris Geyser Basin and other thermal areas that say, do not go into these pools, because some of them are, you know, more than 212 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, 275 degrees Fahrenheit. And what happened, unfortunately, is that this young man went in to test the water. He slipped. He fell in.
Oh.
And, Gina, there were no remains.
Oh, my goodness.
So there is this other part of our human experience that we are so disconnected with.
Yes, that's a those senses are so dulled or gone that it would be something that people that were connected, you wouldn't have to put a sign up.
Right. And then one of the things that the park has been trying to do is that they've said, the park leadership, Dan Wank is the superintendent, he's just phenomenal. He said, you know, we've been studying, they've hired two anthropologists to study the least studied animal in the park, and that's the human. And one of the things of the preliminary studies are showing, because of course when something like this happens, which is just, you know, horrible tragedy, you would ask, was the sign not appropriate? Was it not in the right language? Was the graphic of do not enter not strong enough? And it turns out, and I'm not talking about this particular incident, but it turns out in general when we see these situations, whether someone's thrown by a bison, someone goes into a thermal pool, that they know the risk, but they don't think it's going to happen to them.
Right, right. It's their decision. And I don't know how you ever put enough protection in place to protect people from themselves, which is what you're talking about. I mean, that's the biggest challenge of all. I cannot even imagine. Well, on a much happier note, there are so many, and I underscore, educational components and projects that all contribute to the well-being of the park. I honestly had no idea. And when I read about them, there are so many. Can you highlight a few of them? Like, there's one tab that says Wildlife Wonders and Wilderness Projects. There are literally 10 of them under that. And of course, I honed in on the Wolf Project and how and of the grizzly, the climate impacts on grizzly bear. But I mean, again, all of our listeners go to yellowstone.org and enjoy this experience learning about all they do. So can you highlight a couple of those projects?
Absolutely. So we are trying to also work on native trout. Trout were introduced.
I saw that one too.
Yes. They were introduced into the rivers for tourists in the 20s and the 30s. And the non-native species are a threat to West Slope cutthroat trout, which are just amazing, beautiful fish and also really important to the ecosystem. So we've supported a program to try to remove the non-native species and really help the native trout flourish. What we're finding, and this is so exciting, for the first time, I think in 15 or 20 years, bears are actually fishing in streams in Yellowstone now.
Wow.
And then one of the things I was going to say about Yellowstone, is, and I know you know this, Gina, because you're so involved in all of these issues, it can be really depressing when you're talking about the environment and conservation,
Why this show is making me so happy. It's like, oh, man, sometimes it's just my husband and I put our heads down on the studio table and say, why did we ever start this?
And then when you learn all of this and you have these guests on your show, you can't unlearn the huge challenges that we face. But the good news is that Yellowstone has so many success stories. So whether the non-native trout, we're trying to get rid of the non-native trout and support the native trout program. We still need support for that to happen, but we're seeing success. Whether it's the reintroduction of the wolf, where we're seeing ecosystems actually respond because now we don't have as many elk as we did, so the aspen are starting to thrive, and it seems like the wolf reintroduction is actually making a significant impact on the ecosystem itself, to grizzly bears. There are huge successes to bison. So we've seen our systems, our programs work, and these important tales of recovery. So that's one of the things that at Yellowstone Forever we want to highlight, is that there are really wonderful stories to be told in this park, as big as the issues that we face.
And given
climate change, et cetera, in front of us.
Given the size of the park, when I read about the Native Fish Conservation Program and thought about my brother, who is the avid fisherman, like I don't even want to get started on his his ridiculousness, but he is a big fisherman. And the funding needed just for this project, to scale this, is $1 million annually have to be matched. Because I thought about, how do you go about doing this? All the research pieces, the equipment you need, the staff, and all of that, and then you're fighting things like drought, which there's that.
Exactly. So that's a project that we are, is front and center for all that we do. We do work on cougars, actually, in Yellowstone as well. So wildlife health in general is something that we're trying to support. So when we're talking about wildlife research, we're supporting park scientists and their work to really solve some critical issues, whether it be to restore native populations of animals, or whether it to be safeguard wildlife health, or whether it be ecosystem and habitat restoration do. And the other thing that we do is more kind of capital projects, but are really important. I mentioned many times the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone and the trail program, and basically making those trails safer and more friendly to visitors and be able to receive the crush of visitors that we're having in the park. So that's one of the big projects that we're working on. We're also working on an updated youth campus. It's pretty exciting. The plans for it are not only, it's called a living building. So it's not just LEED. It's kind of LEED Platinum 2.0, a living building.
Wow.
So we make sure that this place where we will help support kids to go and have park experiences, especially kids from areas and socioeconomic levels, they wouldn't have the opportunity to come into the park. But to have them have this park experience, but also learn from the building itself and have the building be part of the ecosystem and have classes around the building and how it works too. So that's very exciting. That's something that we're focusing on.
And what were those job openings again?
I know exactly. We're growing. We're growing. Absolutely. Gina, call me.
Mrs. Green goes to heaven. And I just have to ask you, have you seen a cougar, you, Heather White? Yet?
I have not. I have seen wolves through the spotting scope, and it was really exciting. May is a beautiful time to come because that's when all the babies are out. So I got to see baby bison, which we call red dogs, which are so cute. And you know, it's funny because in law school, I studied in Nairobi, Kenya, and spent a lot of time in the Maasai Mara. And being on safari, I absolutely felt that in Yellowstone. It's very much, people call it America's Serengeti, too. And so we have spotting scopes. So we'll go out with a spotting scope and set a scope up in places like the Lamar Valley. And not only, you know, do you get to see bison and bison calves, I got to see wolves in a wolf den. So I got to see a couple pups, which was so wonderful.
Oh, my goodness.
And then just a couple weeks ago in the fall, we saw a grizzly in the spotting scope, fortunately, keyword, in the spotting scope, not
far,
close to the
far,
grizzly.
Far, far away.
Far away.
Where you want to see a grizzly.
Exactly. And then as I was watching this grizzly bear, you know, get ready for the winter, and he was digging up roots, a bald eagle flew in the spotting, you know, flew in my field of vision in the spotting scope. And my husband and I were just joking, you know, the Star Spangled Banner should just be playing, you know, as we're out in the field. I mean, it really is a wonderland and a magical place. So many people have their own unique Yellowstone story.
I can't wait to be interviewed on the air for mine. I'll get someone to come in here and interview. But
definitely,
Heather,
you bet.
Earlier in the show, and it does, I think, speak to this point with one of your challenges, how do you get people to go deeper in and not be as, you know, putting as much stress and pressure on the main parts of the park? What are some of the challenges that you have there, and how do you plan to, or how are you overcoming them?
I think that really deals with partnerships, and that'll be a big focus that we have with Yellowstone Forever. How can we have the right partnerships? And the reason I say that is because I think youth engagement and mentoring is really key to get people to want to have that experience deeper in the park, to go for that hike or that walk, carrying bear spray, of course, which is very important. But we need people to understand that the experience isn't just a driving one.
Yes.
You know, as much as that trip I took when I was 11, I did a lot of driving. You know, my dad did a lot of driving when we were going around. And there is something about experiencing the American West through the car.
Right.
is uniquely American and part of our culture. But it's the getting out and connecting part. And I think that's where we really need mentoring and youth connection. So I'm looking forward to connecting more on a national level with the Scouts, with Boys and Girls Club, with other organizations like that about how do we create these moments for kids to have positive outdoor experiences with mentors. All the research says is that if you have a significant outdoor experience before the age 11 with someone that you respect who's a grown-up, you will most likely have a lifelong conservation ethic.
So
I think that's really important for
huge.
The future.
And thank you to my mom and dad who gave all of us that, and to your mom and dad who gave us that, because then it's in you forever. I really do believe that. It's just and the other thing is, it doesn't have to be an expensive tour across America. You can take
right
here in Tucson, there are treasures that are free and accessible to everyone. It just takes the effort of getting people out to do it. And this surrounding area is absolutely beautiful. We have about a minute and a half till the next break, but I want to talk a little bit about a very big surprise for me when I was, I mean, you should have seen me, Heather, poking around this website, and I'm like, reading this. No, Gina, focus. Reading this. No, Gina, focus. No, Gina, focus. You have to do this. And I really did a lot of that because it is definitely a bucket list, and I just told people recently that I haven't been there, and how can that be? But I would love to talk about, I was very surprised at how inexpensive private tours can be. I thought they'd mm-hmm. be thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. And I think we should dispel that myth and go into it a little bit when we come back. And then, yeah, the private tours tab, I couldn't believe it. And then I think we should really spend some time talking about the Yellowstone Forever campaign. I'd like to read a quote that I got from the website, because we hope this show will inspire people to action and not just be a good experience hearing about Yellowstone. Everybody, stay here with me. More from the delightful and ever knowledgeable Heather White. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks so much for joining us. With us for this hour is Heather White. Heather is the president and CEO of Yellowstone Forever, a newly formed entity that is dedicated to preserving this national treasure for generations to come, and how very important that is. In her role, she is leading the charge to ensure that the ideas, the energy, and the contribution from many different people are actively included to help successfully enhance and preserve Yellowstone for the future. You can visit Yellowstone and go into the world, literally, by visiting their website at yellowstone.org and follow them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest at YNPForever. That's their handle for each one of those social media platforms. So, Heather, again, thanks so much for taking this time when you have such a big job to spread this incredibly inspiring word about your enthusiasm is contagious. So just touch on a little bit about the private tours.
Absolutely. So we have all kinds of opportunities for engagement through Yellowstone Forever. We actually operate about 12 bookstores throughout the park. So we have guides, we have books, we have anything that you could need. You know, I mentioned bear spray multiple times because it's my duty to talk about the importance of bear spray when you're hiking and camping out in Yellowstone. Exactly. And then we also provide courses and private tours. So a tour can run anywhere from $300 to longer, depending on what you want. If you want, like, probably a four-hour tour is a couple $100s, which may sound a lot, but it can be up to 13 people. So there's a lot of opportunities there for you to have a private experience. We also have classes and multi-day classes. We have a wonderful facility in the Lamar Valley, which is called the Lamar Valley Buffalo Ranch, and that's actually where the bison recovery in Yellowstone was started. And that's a wonderful place where we have just tremendous amount of resources, whether it be cross-country skiing trips, whether it be trips with famous photographers to learn about wildlife photography, whether it be in the spring to look at babies, whether to be learning about the geology of the area, all kinds of opportunities through the Yellowstone Forever Institute, which is available on our website, yellowstone.org. But I think you'll find it's very reasonable. We are a nonprofit, and all of the funds that we raise, not only do we provide educational services for the park experience, but that money also supports the park as well. And so it's really exciting.
It's really exciting. And what I wonder is part of your vision and the strategy, you know, in many schools around the country, they're going to year-round schools, so breaks are very different in the timing. It's not everybody's off, you know, June, July, and August. Do you think that will help or impact the flow of traffic and change the visitor pattern, perhaps?
I think it really can. We're seeing more and more people come in October and come in April and May. So I think that can change the experience. We are working with several school systems, and we do provide opportunities, again, thanks to private individual donors
right.
and corporate donors to take kids from inner city Chicago, from Charlotte, from all kinds of different areas to have their experience in Yellowstone. We also support a park program called Expedition Yellowstone for fourth graders to actually spend a week in the park learning. So they're all, I think that it is going to help. I think the park itself is going to have to address the how do we move
yes.
people through the park in the summer months, and I don't know what that answer is. Our job is to try to bring in corporate partners. We've been working really closely with Michelin North America.
Okay.
And they have brought in contractors and advisors to really help the park think through what might be some of the options. Is it a tram, as you were mentioning earlier? Is it a reservation system? Is it capacity? But, you know, one of the things is if you build bigger parking lots, they'll just get filled.
Yes.
But not as fast.
You
know,
yes. Yes.
How should this work, and what is the vision of the park 15, 20 years from now? So that's something that we will be supporting and talking about.
And it's great to see the corporate stewardship involved, and it can be, it's laudable and philanthropic, but it's also, it's smart, because
yes.
we need to protect these national treasures for so many reasons that benefit us whether we ever step in the park or not. I think we have to see, you know, the broader scope of how that impacts it. So
definitely.
I'd like to read a quote that really sunk in and hit home for me. Yellowstone is our gift and our responsibility. What we do for it today will be bigger and more lasting than all of us. The campaign, when they're talking about the Yellowstone Forever campaign, is our chance to carry this treasured place forward for the next generation and to create future stewards to support it. So tell us about the campaign itself and why its success, it really is so vital.
Well, our campaign is a fundraising campaign to support the park over the next several years. And actually, in 5 years, it'll be the 150th anniversary of Yellowstone National
wow.
Park. We just celebrated the centennial of the park service itself in August 2016. So we have many opportunities for people to support the park. There's a Wilderness Forever Fund, which really supports the ranger program, backcountry research, our backcountry cabin readiness. We also have a science fund that you can support the research we were talking about earlier with non-native species and how we can get them out of the park and support the native species in the park, whether it be wolf recovery. Also the visitor's experience. How can we make sure that the visitor's experience is first class and a positive one for people through upgrades to everything from the Roosevelt Arch, which we just did a big renovation there and supported that for the Park Service, and the overlooks of the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone. We also have opportunities for Yellowstone youth programs. So I mentioned this youth campus that we are supporting. It has not been constructed yet, but it's a living building that would house not only the Youth Conservation Corps, which are high school students that spend their summers supporting the park and doing trail maintenance and research, but also Expedition Yellowstone for fourth graders to engage with the park. So
right.
on our website, one of the things we really try to do is meet the needs and interests of our supporters. So what you're interested in, we want to create an avenue for you to be able to support the park, whether
right.
it's grizzly bears or youth engagement. We have different portals for you to be able to support the park.
And you have, it looks to me like you have not just youth, but college and teacher programs, which I also think are vitally important. Anything you can do for teachers who are probably mostly, I would say, innately good stewards of public lands.
Yes,
you know
yes.
what I mean? It's like, if you're a
Absolutely.
Teacher, you kind of care about those things.
Right. It's so true. It's so true. And we're part of the National Environmental Education Association, and environmental education is at the center of what we do. And one of the other things I didn't mention, Gina, but I think it's something that is critical to the success of Yellowstone Forever and, frankly, the park, is our volunteer program. So we have many people, most of them, not all, but the majority of them are in their third act. They're retired
right.
professionals that spend their summers or winters helping us in the bookstores, helping us do interpretation, supporting the park through maintenance, supporting the park by guiding people. And it's a great opportunity for folks who are kind of thinking, what is their next chapter going to
yes.
be? And it's been wonderful for me to hear the stories of folks who may decide to, you know, spend their summer in an RV. I met a wonderful volunteer who's been with us. This was his first summer, but he connected with a couple that had been working with us for 10 years, every summer, and he is a neurosurgeon when he's not doing retail selling books about Yellowstone in one of our parks. You know? So it's just one, and we also have a group called the Weekend Warriors. And some of them drive 18, 19 hours to help us get our facilities ready for guests that come stay with us for our lodging and learning programs.
You're kidding.
And our yeah.
And they're volunteers?
Volunteers who love the park, love the mission of Yellowstone Forever, really see how important it is that we create opportunities for engagement for the next generation and protect this special place.
It's just so wonderful to talk about that. Given a very ugly period that we just finished, that I'm so glad it's over. You know, the election, everybody can have their thoughts about that. This isn't a political show. But to hear about the goodness, it's always
yes.
bothered me. It's part of the Mrs. Green's World mission and vision.
Right.
There is so much good going on out there. When you tell stories like this, I mean, it's unbelievable to hear what people will do to give back. We are, so many of us by nature, philanthropic.
It's so true, and it's inspiring. And what I love about connecting with the folks here in the area and also, of course, our volunteers and supporters is what inspires them.
Yes.
You know, how they, everyone has their own special story about how they connected with Yellowstone and why they're giving their time and their resources for this wonderland. And it's something that, you know, stays with me and helps underscore what an honor and a privilege it is to be able to do this work, but also how important it is, even if people don't go here. Just one of the things that Henry George talked about before Yellowstone was even created, he said that public lands were vital to Americans' consciousness of freedom. Just knowing that these spaces are protected, just knowing they exist, is really important to our collective experience as Americans.
This is one of those things where, like, I'm trying to write things down, and I'm going to have to re-listen to the show because these are great sound bites for Twitter to get people excited about listening to the show. And thank God I have a great team of people who help support me on that. And I want to reiterate again that when you go to the place on the website, which is, like I said, absolutely fantastic, it's even under Shop Yellowstone. There's a tour you can take that is called Stewardship of Public Lands, and it's for college age groups. 3 to 5 days are recommended, and it's $454 for a 5-day program.
Yes.
That is like,
yes.
I read that and I'm like, that
yes.
can't be right. I mean, this
right.
is a this
right.
is a $1,500 experience here.
Right.
So that's part of what you're saying is through the philanthropy of people who do have means and can give, you know, larger amounts of money, mm-hmm. it helps to support the experience for this, which is an investment in everybody's future.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Really, really, really exciting. So what else do we have that I didn't cover in my enthusiasm to cover it all? Are there certain things that we talked about in terms of, you know, not giving enough detail or exciting upcoming events that you'd like to cover? Because you have a lot, and it blows me away how much you know already in the stories that you've accumulated in your short time there.
You know, I would love to just tell you a story actually about my daughters kind of making the transition here from Washington, D.C. to Bozeman. This summer when I was preparing for the move, they actually came out. Unfortunately, my husband wasn't able to get away from work, so my mother-in-law actually came with me. And my mother-in-law and my two girls, who are 9 and 11, did a tour with one of the fabulous Yellowstone Forever instructors. So they went to this place called Trout Lake. The instructor brought watercolors, so the girls actually and grandma all did paintings of the lake, and then they came back. But the girls, you know, this is after a whole day of meetings for me, the girls on the drive from Gardner to Bozeman, which is about an hour and 15 minutes, they were talking nonstop about the wolves, because the researcher had told them all about the different wolves' personalities and which pack got along with another pack and their interactions with a grizzly bear, and they told me all these stories in detail. And what was fun for me is that when it was time to go back to school, we ordered backpacks, and you can get like any type of little logo you want on your backpack. And, you know, since I have a 9 and 11-year-old girl, sometimes it's a rainbow or a unicorn.
Right, right.
A lot of rainbows and unicorns in my household. And they both chose wolves.
Awesome.
On their backpacks.
Yes.
And what was so neat for me is that they didn't see a wolf. They didn't see one through the spotting scope. But it was just time in Yellowstone with a fabulous instructor telling the stories of what researchers and animal behavior specialists had learned and conservation biologists about the wolves that captivated them and inspired them.
What a great story. And it really, it's a perfect... leads me to another question, because I always have more questions. What would you advise, there will be people listening to this, myself included, that are inspired to act. Like, let's do this. Let's move it up on the bucket list. Like, make a plan. We're going to save, bring the family there. What would you recommend in terms of trip planning to really maximize the experience? Don't just plan to go and drive through, right? What would you advise people? Because there is great information on your website, might I add.
Great question. Yes, and I would say the website is a terrific resource, and also when you call Yellowstone Forever, we have a fabulous contact center of people who really know different itineraries to go through the park. I will say that going in May, June, and more like September, October are better times to go because there really are a lot of people in the high summer months.
Right.
Old Faithful is a must-see because it's an iconic American experience.
Right.
But I didn't know about all the other geysers that are around Old Faithful. I didn't remember that from my 11-year-old trip and my time out here when I was in my early 20s. So the geyser basins are really incredible outside of Old Faithful. And then Grand Prismatic Spring, they call it the eye on the world, is absolutely stunning. And that's that kind of rainbow color hot spring that you can see the aerial view. There's a new trail that will open up next year where you can actually get that perspective of seeing it from above.
Wow.
Which is a must, must do.
Right.
I also think that Mammoth Hot Springs, people tend to drive by, but really... if you can stop by our office in Gardner right before you go to the park, the Yellowstone Forever office there, and talk to folks about what you're seeing at Mammoth Hot Springs, kind of having that curated experience helps you understand more about how incredible it is. And then the other thing, I mentioned this a little bit earlier, is stopping by the Historic Research Center.
Right.
The HRC. You know, I mean, this is the D.C. part of me, right? I love the Natural History Museum. I love the American History Museum. And the HRC is of the highest quality, and it has just an incredible collection of art, of artifacts from the park, of cultural artifacts from different tribes that have been in the park for centuries. It's awesome. Those are kind of highlights for me, but there's
I'm hanging
so
on
much.
Your every word, believe me. And the other thing is, it's like, just if you are planning a trip and you do have kids, or for me, it would be wonderful to bring my grandchildren, there's a book that caught my eye because I'm a big, big, big kid lover. There is a book. It's only $10.95, and it's Yellowstone for Kids. And I love the wording. Like, I just want the person who, or the people who did your website to just come on over and spend a couple days here. But it says it's a kid's guide to Yellowstone that will help kids, like you say, more curated and connect them more deeply with the park. And get them to investigate topics that interest them. I just think it's wonderful. If you're planning the trip, maximize it in every way. And I want to ask you the best way to, how many days would you say are minimal for people to come there? Like, it's not a day trip. It's like when I went to D.C. and I said, I'm going to go see the museum of or I'm going to go see the Smithsonian. Like,
Right.
You get to like one half of one
building. Right, exactly.
And you're like, oh, I'm not seeing the Smithsonian today and tomorrow and the next day. So what do you say, ideally, if you have unlimited funds, how many days?
Well, Gina, I'm looking forward to checking in with you this time next year to see if my response changes, because I've been here for 3 months. So I'm still discovering something literally every day on the job about how magnificent this park is. So I would think 3 days. Great. Mostly because that's how long my kids can kind of stay in one place.
Yes. But that's,
or even like even in the idea place, even though it's massive. But you could easily spend 7 to 10 days here. But it's an incredible opportunity. It's worth preserving. And I just appreciate so much the time to be able to tell you how much I love it and for us to engage any of your listeners to support Yellowstone Forever.
Final word, Heather White, I appreciate you. And I hope we're talking about my trip next year. Thanks,
Thank
everybody.
You, Gina.
Make it a great green week.